Welcome to this week's episode of Rookie Roulette, where we are covering Philadelphia 76ers rookie Jerod McCain. I know I, too, am starting to get worried about the curse of Rookie Roulette, as after the first episode, Donovan Klingon got hurt. Shortly after the second episode with Tristan Da Silva, Franz Wagner got hurt. And then I know this is coming out after McCain's injury was announced, but the wheel was spun before it happened. So we're keeping an eye on it. I apologize. But regardless, McCain, I thought, was still more than worthy of discussing this week, because when he was healthy, he was so freaking good and had such an incredible season. So make sure to stick around. I have an awesome interview coming in the next couple minutes here with Sam DiGiovanni from Clutch Points, provided a ton of really, really good insight on McCain and the 76ers in general, and especially kind of how they're barely treading water based on their defense. So stick around for that interview. With McCain, though, he ended up being the 16th pick to the Philadelphia 76ers, shooting guard out of Duke. And he was always one of these guys who was pegged as just a shooter and not a good enough athlete, not big enough to play the two, not skilled enough to play the one, below the rim finisher. And I thought all of that got way overblown. And one of the reasons that he ended up on 8 on my board and 11 on the official No Ceilings composite board was because I thought there was so much more to his offense, where we saw the insanely efficient at-rim finishing, his ability to play off 2 feet, play with strength and craft and creativity and balance, get downhill, get to his spots, is all really impressive. But he was always used as mainly just an off-ball shooter at Duke because he was, by leaps and bounds, the best shooter on that team. They had other guys who could handle and pass, but they had no one else who could shoot like him. So he just kind of inevitably fell into that role and thrived in it, but didn't get to show what we're seeing now with Philly. So with Philly, the shot's still there. Turns out he's an awesome shooter. Also, he was scoring 1.179 points per shot, which ranked in the 75th percentile. And concerningly a little bit is the at-rim stuff. In college, at Duke, he shot 61.4% at the rim in the half court, which is an insane percentage for a guy his size who is a below-the-rim finisher. This year, it's down to 48%. And I talked with Sam about this a little bit, but my conclusion is more that it's a rookie learning hurdle rather than his freshman year being a fluke. So long-term, I don't have any major concerns, but he was struggling to adjust to the size, explosiveness, speed of NBA level rim protectors. Looking at just the jumper, 80th percentile on all jumpers per our friends at Synergy, 80th percentile off the catch, but still 75th percentile off the bounce. And we're seeing a shift in his shot distribution, where at Duke, it was about a 60-40 split in terms of shot frequency, with 60% of his shots coming off the catch and only about 40 coming off the bounce. This year with the 76ers, it was pretty even, more of a almost identical to a 50-50 split, which is really encouraging. And again, a testament to him having so much more in his game than he was allowed to show at Duke. Additionally, speaking to that growth and those underlying skills, his assist rate at Duke was just 10.7, but this year it's up to 17.1. So by no means is that like an elite playmaker or anything, but it's a testament to him having so much more passing ability than he was allowed to show. I'm going to run through a whole bunch of just kind of lineup data here. It's tricky because the sample size is so small and this team was never complete. You know, none of Paul George, Tyrese Maxey, Embiid, and McCain were all really healthy together for a legitimate amount of time to make any meaningful decisions. And they're the only team in the NBA as of recording this, per Cleaning the Glass, who don't have a single lineup that's played 100 possessions together. That's insane. Their most frequently used lineup is at just 92 possessions. That's tough. And it's a real, it speaks to how many injury issues they've had to kind of deal with. But with McCain specifically, their net rating is plus 3 points higher when he's on the court than when he's off. And when he's on the court, their net rating is still minus 3.3. So when he's off, that drops to a minus 6.3. In the 250 possessions where he's played point guard, they have a net rating of minus 2.3. Weirdly enough, when Embiid is off the court, the 178 possessions that he's been off the court, then their net rating is 2.4 with McCain at point guard. And when McCain's at point guard and Embiid is on the court in those 72 possessions, they have a negative 14.1 net rating. Does it mean anything? Probably not. Probably just, again, speaks to the turnover and roster issues that this team has been having and the lack of chemistry. When we look at his time with Maxey on the court and the 490 possessions they've played together, they have a negative 2.2 net rating. But when Maxey leaves the court in those 660 possessions, they have a negative 4.2 net rating. So again, just kind of trying to provide some sort of context on how these guys are fitting together. But it's also, they haven't had enough time to really gel and figure out each other's game. McCain looks like he's going to be a really legitimate piece going forward. But the trick is the 76ers have to get healthy. And it sucks. Injuries are the worst. Please turn them off. Please go into user settings, scroll down to injuries, turn those off. It would make life so much more enjoyable. But McCain looks like the real deal. And the fact that he was kind of the most consistent and reliable piece as an undersized rookie guard is a real testament to his mental makeup and his skills. So stick around for my interview with Sam DiGiovanni from Clutch Points. Sam is awesome, does great work. Make sure to go follow him as well. Before we jump to that, though, let's bring up the wheel, figure out who we're talking about next week. All right, here we go. Spinning the wheel. And we have, oh boy, this could be fun. All right, this team has been really interesting. Rookie out of Tennessee. It should be a good one. It may be a week with the holiday schedules and stuff. We might have to take a week off from posting, but we'll see. We'll try and make it happen. If not, keep an eye out for it the following week. Let's jump over to my interview with Sam. Thrilled to welcome on this week's guest to talk with me about Jared McCain from Clutch Points, Sam DiGiovanni. Sam, how's it going?
It's going good, man. I mean, as good as it can in Sixers land. There's always something going on with them. I'm excited to talk about McCain. He had obviously really great season before suffering this unfortunate injury. And although he's out, still out indefinitely, that was the last update. There's a lot of hope for his future, and rightfully so. He was really balling out.
Yeah, so I mean, since it's timely, let's talk about the injury just real quick. Have you heard any kind of insights other than out indefinitely? Because the meniscus, you know, there are kind of a couple different ways that they can go about it. A quicker recovery tends to have some more long lasting issues, but if they go for the, you know, kind of full repair, it's the long term effects are a little better, but he's out, that's going to mean he's out for longer. So have you kind of gotten any inclination on what direction they're leaning towards with him?
So the last update from the team came earlier this week. Just said that he underwent successful surgery, will be out indefinitely. They'll provide updates whenever appropriate. Nothing yet as far as a specific timeline for him. Nick Nurse has talked about, in practice a little bit, like how unfortunate it is that, you know, Jared's still kind of going through the process of just kind of accepting it all, honestly, like the super unfortunate injury that would be unfortunate for any player, but especially one who has risen from like kind of uncertain his role rookie to one of the, you know, most important players on the team in this like really hectic Sixers season. So unfortunately, you know, there's such like the range that you mentioned it could be for his time out. We unfortunately don't know that yet, but it is possible that it's, you know, season ending. I'll obviously, you know, keep my eyes peeled about updates for that. I mean, I think it's safe to say, you know, for the time being, they should expect to play as long as they can without him. And that's going to be tough because he really emerged honestly pretty quickly as like one of the team's best and most important players.
So McCain was obviously the 16th pick out of Duke. He ended up at 8 on my board personally. I really bought into him being far more than just a shooter, which is what he kind of consistently got billed as. What was kind of your initial reaction on draft night? Just kind of big picture when he fell to the 76ers at pick 16. What was your initial reaction of the pick?
So I thought it was pretty good. There was a lot of chatter, if I remember correctly, about like potential trades and whatnot, because the, you know, Sixers are always trying to, you know, they really want to be a win now team. They want to make the most of the last, you know, few years that Joel Embiid has to be a top player. They want to take advantage of Tyrese Maxey rising into stardom. And obviously we didn't know it at the time, but now they have Paul George, they have this big three. So it was, you know, kind of unclear if they would hold and make that pick. There were some guys left on the board that I was really looking for. And McCain was someone, I don't know if I ever wrote about him Sixers specifically, but I kind of viewed him as like a pretty solid option. I think the two players who were still available that I really would have wanted them to get were Tristan Da Silva and Isaiah Collier. Looking at Collier's, you know, rim pressure and just his production that kind of went underlooked a little bit, like really made me, you know, high on him. And then Tristan Da Silva as a guy that you can, you know, potentially have as like your last starter. He's pretty old, but he's also very well-rounded and stuff. So those were the two guys that at pick 16, I thought would have been the best use of that pick. It turns out obviously it was McCain with how great he's been. And at the time I was still like, okay, this is a good pick. There were obviously the instant questions about, well, how do he and Tyrese Maxey fit together? Can one of them be a lead guard? What do you do defensively? But clearly, you know, what Daryl Morey explained that night and what we've seen so far is that, hey, they're both so dynamic on offense that the fit is great anyway. And, you know, I remember one of the things looking at McCain is like, he can do little things. He had flashes at Duke of doing more than just shooting, which, you know, that was obviously his main selling point, mm-hmm. but some, you know, creation stuff, some ball handling ability to not blow by defenders, but use his strength, use his creativity to get into the paint and make kind of the right passes. And it led to questions about like, what can he really do on the ball? Is it is it something he really needs to work on? Is it just how he was being used at Duke? And so obviously it turns out he can do a lot more on the ball. And that pick right now looks fantastic. I think I wrote in my draft grades, I think I gave it an A, because even if the fit is unclear, it's just worth betting on a talent and a hard worker like that. I remember, I think it was the draft guys at ESPN had insight about something that John Shire told them. And it was something along the lines of McCain is the hardest worker, the most diligent worker that he's ever seen in his time in the Duke program. And for someone who played 4 years and has been on the coaching staff as an assistant or head coach for over a decade, like that's obviously huge. So I liked it a good bit at the time, but obviously now I think everyone around here loves it. It was obviously a fantastic pick and everyone very quickly has gravitated towards Jared.
Yeah, and the work ethic stuff really popped in person too when I saw him at Hoop Summit. It's like, oh, this dude, there's a sense of maturity that's really different than his peers, and he's understanding the situation and, you know, who a lot of the people who are watching him right now, who they are. And it all felt just like really genuine too. And I'm really glad that Tristan Da Silva was on your list for the 76ers, because it seems like last year, every single mock draft we did, if he was still there when the 76ers came up, he'd be like, man, this makes a lot of sense. God, this fit is really nice. So yeah, I'm glad we weren't alone or crazy in that.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I mean, he's doing pretty well with the Magic, I think, right? As like a playoff ready guy, like, or ready to, you know, come in and play for a playoff team. He obviously looks very solid there. Even if, you know, McCain's ceiling is a little higher because of his youth, but yeah, Tristan Da Silva, I'm glad to see that he's working out for another pretty good team.
So you were high on the McCain pick right away, or at least initially, coming into the season. And have those feelings changed at all, either gotten even better or worse as the season's progressed?
So I would say they took a dip probably around summer league. It was clear that he like knew what to do and he wasn't shooting the ball well, but that wasn't a huge concern. I think everyone knew like, okay, he's not shooting well now, but it's not like he totally forgot how to shoot. Although plenty of other Sixers in the past have had those issues come up where they just don't shoot well in the Sixers at Sixers fans. I'm sure in the back of their mind, we're like, oh great, here we go again. As the season's gone on, I've only been more and more impressed. I think everyone has, really, just showing like how around the dysfunction that they've had of Joel not being ready for the season because of his knee issue and then getting suspended, Paul George starting the season injured, like pretty much every rotation player at some point getting injured and missing a few games on top of that, you know, and that leading to just a losing situation where they're very far under 500. It's going to take a lot of time for them to, you know, get back into it. Like, he's still been not just like pretty decent, like he has been awesome, you know. I write about this sometimes too, and you cannot carve up a lot of stats to be like first rookie with, you know, 30 points, 5 assists, whatever, a certain amount of field goal percentage. So some of those stats, and I will admit I do this a lot myself, can sometimes be oddly specific. But when you, there was a stretch where if you sliced it up over a few games, it was like Larry Bird, Steph Curry, Trey. Like, it was a collection of guys who went on to be great, great players. And he maintained this stretch of play for like a week or so, like maybe even longer than a week, like seven or so games without a consistent veteran presence to lean on. He's been leading the offense, you know, with the ball, off the ball. He's been fantastic. He's clearly like wise beyond his years and how to maximize his strengths and how he can get himself open, how he can keep the offense moving, especially in an offense where the, I wouldn't say the sets are super, super intricate. It's a lot of, you know, depending on stars to draw two and then getting the ball moving. But he just came in with such a great infusion of shooting and IQ that he really kept the team moving. And he's, you know, certainly got a lot of work to do on defense, but he competes super hard. He's not afraid to dive for a loose ball or rebound. And, you know, obviously, you know, Philly fans love gritty players like that. So to see someone who has this kind of glitz and glamour game to him with his shooting and his ball handling and his ability to, you know, kind of set the offense on top of being a competitor, he's been not only a very quickly becoming a fan favorite, but he, I would say, is firmly in the Sixers like core four right now. Like, he, you know, you wouldn't say a star necessarily, but it's obviously the three stars they have. And then him, like, that is the foundation of this team going forward. And it happened before New Year's, and he's not, you know, we'll see how much time he has left this season because of his injury, but he has already made himself clear. Like, he is a building block for this team. And it's just been extremely impressive to see. And I thought I was high on him relatively, but he has just exceeded mine and I think everybody's expectations.
Sign, obviously Embiid's injury issues have been well documented and Paul George has kind of been in and out and Tyrese Maxey's been hurt. And up until he got hurt, McCain was weirdly the most kind of consistent and reliable piece on this team. Mm-hmm. What were the kind of vibes and feelings and just emotions around the team and the fan base with, you know, a quote unquote small guard below the rim finishing guard being that most kind of consistent piece on a team that kind of had title expectations or at least aspirations?
Yeah, for sure. I think it obviously took a lot of people by surprise and it showed like, you know, this is not just some rookie who can come in and like do things if everything is right. Like the fact that he has been able to kind of thrive through such a rough stretch of the season without, you know, the stars that you would expect any rookie, but especially a non-lottery rookie, even just outside, whatever, to like depend on. Like the fact that he came in and it wasn't just like he had a hot game or so. He was consistently scoring really efficiently, getting the offense moving with, you know, his own movement off the ball and him just, you know, keeping the ball moving, making the right passes and stuff. I think really, you know, a lot of people obviously gravitated towards him because he had a pretty good season in college, because he's a very like upbeat and happy guy. Like a lot of people really wanted to see him succeed, and he's already succeeded like well beyond what anyone expected. And so obviously McCain playing so well didn't stop the Sixers from losing, but also like that would have taken like an act of God. Like no one expected him to do that with all the crazy stuff that's been happening over this season, that stuff this season that has even surprised like seasoned fans and like seasoned observers of the Sixers team. They still find ways to be, you know, brutally unlucky and just surprise people with all the crazy injury stuff and side stories and whatever on top of the, you know, losing that's actually been pretty rare in the Joel Embiid era. Like, I don't know the last time they've been this far under 500. I think it was probably Embiid's first healthy rookie year where he only played a little bit. But yeah, McCain has been just such a refreshing, like, breath of fresh air, that, you know, a real reason to watch while the team was going through all those injuries and stuff, and yeah, the stars were in and out of the lineup, on top of just showing like he can be consistently a very good player and certainly already like understands what he can do at the NBA level. Like, he was just a reason for fans to just keep tuning in.
So coming out of Duke and even kind of going into Duke, McCain just was by so many kind of evaluators was just constantly pitched as he's just a shooter. He's just this off-ball guard, and he's not big enough to really play two at the NBA. But throughout high school, even at Duke in some spurts here and there, we got so many flashes of, oh man, he's a really smart passer and he can really get to the rim, really get to his spots in the mid-range, plays off 2 feet, is really, really strong, especially for his size. The shooting has still been there this year, but it seems like he's doing so much more on offense and kind of finally being empowered to explore those different aspects of his game. Some of it due to necessity based on injuries and lack of performance or whatever. But also just because of that, that's kind of how good he is when we kind of think about what's been the most impressive aspect of his game so far. Is it some of that? Is it the shooting? Is it the fact that he was able to just kind of step right into a somewhat dysfunctional situation without a bump? For you, what's kind of impressed you the most with this rookie?
So I would say, like, him coming in and being more than just a spot up shooter, a guy who, you know, has legitimate gravity and knows how to use it on and off the ball, has been really impressive to see. I want to give a quick shout out to my guy, Dan Olinger, who writes for the Red Turkey Sanchez. One of the things that he said about McCain after the pick was kind of weighing what he can do on and off the ball based on what he saw at Duke. And I think he hypothesized correctly that because of Duke having some other guards that were better on the ball than off the ball, on top of a high usage big in Kyle Filipowski, that was just the role that McCain was best suited for the team. It was kind of building off of, okay, are these flashes legitimate? Are they flashes because they're weaknesses, or is it just because of what Duke needs to keep itself going as a team? And I think it's shown clearly now that it was pretty much just Duke kind of asking him to, like, fit a different role. And it showed his versatility even in that specific role, but also now with a bigger role in a bigger, you know, platform, like a better league to do it in. He's hit the ground running relatively. Like, he obviously came off the bench first, and then he made his way into the starting lineup. Nick Nurse kind of flipped with him in and out of the starting lineup before he got injured. But the fact that he is able to, you know, break down his defender, able to understand driving angles, he has, you know, some of the guard tricks that we saw, have seen from Maxey's past two seasons of, you know, going off, you know, same foot, same hand with the layup, you know, changing up your timing to throw bigs off when you're getting in. McCain's strength, certainly his ability to kind of create enough driving space. And even if he doesn't have a step, like, he's able to kind of bump or spin and, like, pull up for a mid-range shot that looks great. On top of just the relocation, like, you know, Sixers fans were correctly looking at him and being like, that is not that he's the next Steph Curry, but that stuff that Steph Curry does. And even a lot of Warriors fans, I feel like I've seen, have been like, oh yeah, that is a lot of stuff of what Steph does. So even if it's not, you know, not putting that label on specifically, right, but just the fact that, you know, you're taking elements of Steph's game, like some of the stuff that makes him great, like, from a rookie, is just beyond anyone's comprehension. So the feel for his own strengths and the ability to really create, you know, get the offense going is super, super important, because especially in the time, you know, I think most of his games he's had at least one of the big three to help him out. But it's still impressive, because if it wasn't him, it would have fallen to one of the older guards the Sixers have, like Reggie Jackson or Kyle Lowry, or someone, you know, on the wing who isn't really equipped to, like, kind of be a lead ball handler. But McCain showing that he is, and that he's able to create efficient offense in, again, so many different lineups, still learning the NBA game. It's not even New Year's yet, and he still had to have these big games where he's been the lead engine on offense. It's just super, super impressive. And again, to sort of go back to Dan's point, I think it showed that he needed to be an off-ball guy at Duke because it suited what his teammates were going to do. And he's proven already in 20-something games that he's more versatile in an offensive role than anyone really thought.
Yeah, and that was one of the points. I'm glad that you mentioned Dan pointing that out too, because that was one of the things that I kind of kept pushing all last year of, like, he's being just an off-ball shooter at Duke because he is leaps and bounds the best off-ball shooter on that team. And they have some other guys who can handle the ball and initiate the offense, but they have no one who can, you know, plant their feet and get shot ready and transition as quickly and effectively as him, who can run off screens and hit movement stuff. And then we would, as the season kind of progressed, we slowly saw that rim pressure and mid-range shot creation start to creep in, and that ability to play off 2 feet and the balance. And I mean, he was one of the best, you know, small, quote unquote, small guard finishers around the rim in the half court last year. And he was over 61% in the half court at the rim. That number is unfortunately down to 48% this year. You expect some sort of drop off going against NBA rim protectors compared to college. It's a different world. But do you, and with that kind of specifically, are you concerned long term about that? Or do you think it's just kind of an adjustment period, figuring out those different angles and the speed and the physicality and just how much bigger and more explosive the rim protectors are at this level compared to college and high school?
I think it'll definitely take an adjustment period because, you know, obviously as athletic as he is in general, compared to the NBA game, he is, at least as far as, you know, vertical athleticism, like he's not one of these super high flying guards who's, you know, small, but like makes up for it by finishing above the rim. But I do think, you know, while he, you know, continues to adjust to that, gets his rehab done, whatever, and then, you know, next season and in the years to follow, I think he's shown that he's smart enough and he's crafty enough that he'll be able to find ways to get that done. He's already pretty strong. Like he can, you know, kind of get his way through, carve out space to get his shot open. I think his, you know, shooting touch is good enough to where he could finish in a lot of different ways at a lot of different locations inside the arc. So I think it will be a different calculus for him than it would be for, you know, another guy his height who's like more athletic. But I think that he's already shown a level of craft with the ball, craft shooting it, like that he'll be able to figure it out. I'm interested to see how it grows. You know, I think he'll, you know, once, you know, everyone knew he was coming in as a shooter, but I think his teams figured out more and more, and it's like, hey, you really can't leave him on the perimeter. He'll just turn that into, you know, pump faking, getting by guys and, you know, working on his footwork and stuff. Like, he's already so mature so quickly in the NBA level that I'm optimistic that even if that's probably going to be the weakness of his game, like one of the weaker points, it's not going to be something that's so weak that you can't play him big minutes or play him in playoff settings. I think he will like figure it out as his career goes on.
And I think that he's shown enough of like that mid-range pull-up game where even if he's not constantly getting to the rim and, you know, really deep drop defender, it's like, all right, cool, I'll pull up short and just knock down this 10-foot jumper instead. And his scoring touch is insane. So I'm kind of with you. It feels way more like, oh, hey, welcome to the NBA, Rook, and less like, I forgot how to make a layup type issue. Kind of long-term or looking forward, how do you view him and Maxi kind of just playing together and fitting together on both ends of the court? Because obviously, you know, they've both been injured, limited sample size so far, but you know, negative 2.2 net rating when Maxi's on the court with him and 490 possessions. When he's off, it's negative 4.2 and like 660 possessions. Do you think that they can play together and really thrive as this dynamic offensively focused backcourt? Or is it really just kind of depend on is Joel Embiid healthy or not? And is the front court healthy, and is there some size and athleticism to kind of insulate those guys?
I think, I mean, everything with the Sixers, of course, kind of depends on Embiid's health.
For sure.
I think at the very least, like, it's worth giving more of a sample size to, right? This is, you know, for whatever flaws they have, like, together, whatever too much overlap there is, like, they've both shown that they're hardworking enough and good enough to where that's worth playing together. Like I've seen some Sixers fans talk about them as just, oh, they're just another Dame CJ pairing or stuff like that. And I do understand that to a point,
which was good.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, it's not a bad
quite a
thing.
Bit of
like,
success.
That was a, you know, obviously that backcourt had its flaws. And truthfully, I don't think either one of those guys will be as good as Dame at his peak, which is fine. Cause that was a super, super high level, but that's especially a good thing, especially when you have a player like Joel Embiid, right? Like, the Dame CJ pairing only got to one conference finals, because they were the two best guys, right? Imagine if those guys got to play with like prime Anthony Davis and they had a big man who could give them 20 and clean up a lot of stuff on the back end, which obviously, again, no one really knows with Joel's injuries and stuff, but at his best, he's more than capable of doing that. Like, he can be the offensive engine that gets them even more open shots. Like, he's just not a guy you can leave one-on-one when he gets his position at the nail or in the post or whatever. And having shooters like that, especially, you know, and guys who can attack the rim in their own different ways, like, I think that's super, super valuable to have. I do think it also definitely depends on the wings. Like, if you want to insulate those guys defensively to a degree, like, you need to have good size on the wings, good defenders on the wings. Paul George this season, he's been fun to watch offensively, but it's actually kind of funny that the Sixers offense has been a lot worse with him on the court because of his own flaws. Like, he's so ball dominant that the lack of free throw attempts, the reliance on tough shots, the turnovers, that all kind of bleeds into the Sixers. And a lot of this is because, like, he's had to be the lead guy, so it's kind of understandable. But defensively, he's already shown, like, he's still got plenty of it. Like, he's still super smart. He's super athletic and versatile, that even if he's not the guy he used to be, he's still very good. And I think, you know, they're going to – Sixers are going to continue with him. And I think they also need to continue finding the right fifth starter, whether it's someone like Caleb Martin, Kelly Oubre, Gershon Abicelli. If it's someone they need to trade for in the future, I would guess it's probably that's the right move for them going forward. But at the very least in the next few years, like, I it's worth it to try Maxey and McCain together as the starters. Like, the offense you can create with just those two and Joel Embiid, like, that's already fantastic. And now you add a guy who is as skilled as Paul George, even if he's a little overwhelmed by his high usage role so far this season, like, that's like another guy, like, the spacing is great, and someone else who can just help in there. Like, I do think that pairing Maxey and McCain, even if there are some obvious cons to it, there are also some massive, massive pros that for a Sixers team that wants to make them, you know, is in a championship window, or, you know, believes that it extended it, it's worth trying out and not necessarily just trying to, you know, ditch right away when they both come back. Like, they're definitely both good enough and fit well enough to where they should try them as the starting backcourt going forward.
And I mean, I would kind of assume that going into next season, or once McCain is healthy, whenever that is, that he kind of just slots right back into that starting guard spot next to Maxey, given his production and effectiveness already. When we look at, you know, just some of the lineup numbers, and obviously with the Sixers, it's all tough right now because it's such small sample sizes. But, like, their net rating is 3 points higher when he's on the court than off. When he's on, it's still a negative 3.3, but they've been struggling, so it's to be expected with a team with an 8-16 record. But in the, like, 250 possessions that he's played point guard, the net rating's minus 2.3. And those are all with Maxey off the court. And obviously, you know, it's mentioned earlier, when Maxey's on the court with him, it's a minus 2.2. What kind of position do you think that it's going to kind of come down to? All right, you're the point guard, you're the shooting guard, you're the initiator, or is it the hope kind of, hey, let's just kind of keep playing together, build that chemistry, bulk up the sample size, play through whatever kind of learning curve there is, and just have two really dynamic, versatile, scoring, creative guards in the backcourt at the same time, and not really worry about who the, you know, quote unquote official point guard is?
Yeah, I think most of it's going to come with just reps together and getting familiarity. And I do think, you know, maybe if they both are on these trajectories and their defensive limitations are too much, like, I can see it reaching an inflection point in a few years of where the Sixers have to choose one. But at least for the time being, I think they're their best bet, unless they somehow swing a trade for a star guard, which I don't think is going to happen soon. Like, I do think between them, like, who should be the point guard will probably be a conversation at some point. Like, they'll have to play together without Joel, like, together in other different contexts. But I think the Sixers will be at their best when it's Joel being the initiator, even if he's not. He brings the ball up, like, a few times, but not enough to the point where you would say, like, he is the point guard. But between the two of them, like, I think they both obviously have their skills on the ball, but they're just so dangerous, like, off the ball. I guess most players are at their best attacking a closeout, but those guys especially are going to command such hard closeouts that they're either getting a shot, or they're going to be able to use, for Maxey, his speed, for Jared, his strength and his craftiness to just keep defenses moving. I think that the Sixers' best offense will start when it starts with Embiid, you know, kind of getting it into him and him getting it out to wherever it needs to be, or him starting at the top and setting, you know, inverse pick and rolls and whatever it is. Like, there's a lot of things you can do with guards that good and a big that good. I do think maybe there will be some discussion of, like, whether it's with Joel or not, like, who does need to be the lead ball handler and the lead playmaker. I think they're both pretty selfless, and that shouldn't be a difficult conversation. I think, you know, for whichever way it is, like, whoever's on the ball more, we'll have a lot of players off the ball who can really help that out. I think a lot of that will probably come with, you know, time, having more time throughout the rest of the season, into the offseason, into next, to where they get that feel together and the numbers start looking better, even beyond just Joel Embiid hopefully getting back on track soon. It's just them getting familiar will be helpful.
Yeah, and that's kind of the elephant in the room too, where so many of their minutes together came without Embiid, and it's mm-hmm. like, all right, well, he's one of the most dominant offensive forces in the league when he's healthy. So when he's healthy and on the court, offense is probably going to predominantly run through him anyways. There we go. Problem solved. Have there been any like red flags or things with McCain's game that you're really concerned about, either from an individual level or kind of how it affects the team in a bigger picture sense going forward?
I do think as much as his effort on defense is always there, it's something that gaining familiarity of where to be, how to help out on guys who you have to be quicker to because they're more athletic, they're better shooters than in college. Like that's something that I think will come with time. Just again, he has such a great foundation to work with already super skilled, already ridiculously hardworking. There are no big red flags. There's just a lot of stuff to clean up, a lot of, stuff that will come with more time in the NBA. And, I don't have any firm predictions on if he'll reach like an all-star level, but there are so many good indicators right now to suggest like it wouldn't be crazy if he does. So a lot of that stuff, and obviously, him, growing into his body more, getting more athletic as time comes, more time to train with a professional team. I don't expect it to like make him like this crazy above the rim finisher or whatever. Like he's still going to be relatively what he is now, just a better version. And I think ultimately it'll come with just more NBA experience, him getting more of a familiarity with the speed that once he does that, and unfortunately, again, the injury, we don't know how much more time he's going to get of that this season, but whether it's none or he just picks up again in summer league or he does get, he's able to come back. We'll see when the next update comes out, what that is when it comes out. But like, there's just a lot of great things going in McCain's favor. This injury, again, injuries always really stink, but this one in particular of him showing so much promise already, it's just tough to like see that already. Any red flags, like I haven't seen them already. I've been super, super impressed. And I think with more time, he's only going to get better and better.
Love it. All right. So to wrap up with McCain specifically, it's a little tricky because of the injury. And maybe your answer to this is, hey, just get healthy. But for the rest of this season, and then, let's say off season and into next season, what are your kind of expectations and hopes with him going forward?
I think for the rest of this season, he'll just be someone who's, around the team as often as he can, is just working hard in whatever phase of rehab he's in. There was actually a great story today in the Philadelphia Inquirer by Alex Coffey, who wrote about McCain and Kyle Lowry's connection and how Lowry has been a really great veteran for him, providing such great, great advice. And I think it seemed like McCain was very, very receptive to it. And he's already someone who's always got a very, upbeat attitude and someone who's always willing to put the work in. So I think that bodes well for him in his rehab, however long it's going to take him. Expectation wise, I think, again, the all-star question is very, interesting one to think about. I think there is a chance that he gets to that level. I think it really just depends on like how the Sixers see, whatever they can get out of this season, and then just kind of going into next season, what tweaks they need to make around this big three, considering it now a big four with McCain. I think there are, a good amount of questions because Joel Embiid's been the guy there for such a long time. Tyrese Maxey's the guy who took those steps to becoming, what he is today. And Paul George was the star that chose to come here. So I think, there's a lot of discussion to have, those are the guys that not necessarily you need to cater to, but you have the idea of this is your core. And I think McCain will prove, if he hasn't already, if the Sixers are like, we need to see a bigger sample size, I think he will definitely continue to prove that going forward. And I think, I know a lot of Sixers fans would be very upset if they dangle him as the trade bait to get another veteran star, maybe someone on the wings to fit better. I know a lot of Sixers fans would be unhappy about that, and I get it. It's really interesting to see, where he goes from here. I think with how hard he works, how good he is already, that the sky's the limit for him. And the Sixers, it's maybe necessarily a good problem to have of, oh no, we have too many really good guards who are great scorers who work their tails off. Like, that's a great problem to have, and I think he's proving that. Would really obviously want to see him hooping again this regular season. We'll see again what that injury does and what his recovery timeline looks like. But if this is all we get from McCain this season, it has been fantastic. I think he was well on his way to winning rookie of the year. And I think, unfortunately, for as good as he was, only playing a quarter of the season, voters are not. I mean, he's going to be ineligible for whatever reason. But it was a great rookie season, and I hope that he gets to continue it.
To wrap up, I just kind of want to talk about the team in general, and mainly whatever kind of sparks your interest or you find interesting or noteworthy or exciting. And if you want to go on a diatribe about Joel Embiid, awesome. If you want to dive into the nuances of Gershon Yabusele's game, fantastic. But this isn't a team that's really underachieving, mostly due to injuries, but 8-16 record at time of recording. They're in 12th place, 1.5 games back at the play-in spot. 5 games back from the 6th seed, 28th in offensive rating, 12th, shockingly, in defensive rating. But per cleaning the glass, they're the only team in the league that doesn't have a single lineup with over 100 possessions played together. Their most popular is at 92, with a net rating of -19.3, and that's Maxey, Lowry, Martin, Oubre, and Drummond. I don't know if any of that sparked anything for you, but with this team kind of currently and going forward, what really just kind of stands out or either gets you excited or really worried?
I think the thing to definitely worry about is their offense. Like, coming into the season, there were certainly a lot of questions of do they have enough playmaking? Like, obviously you're looking at these three stars, and if the offense is based around, okay, well, someone's going to get doubled, let's just swing like that. Like, there's at least, you know, somewhat understandable, but I think it's also pretty clear that with those keystones removed, some of them have been for weeks at a time, like, there just seems to be no other answer. And McCain was that answer for a little bit, even if the rest of the team, like, was, you know, too deficient in three-point shooting, which has been a huge, huge problem also. And that contributes to it. Like, if you're, you know, they don't have a lot of guys who read the floor at a super high level. And even if they did, it's probably going to be to someone who's shooting somewhere in the low 30s or 20s from three. Yabusele has been a very, very pleasant surprise. A lot of people are excited about him. His lineup versatility, he's had to play a lot of five because Embiid's injury, and Adem Bono, who in his few minutes has been pretty impressive as well, but he's also a rookie drafted in the second round. Like, you don't want to throw him into the fire right away. So Yabusele, for what they got him for coming over from overseas, has been really impressive. Offensively, they just got to find a way to, you know, instill more creativity into it, find a way to create more advantages and draw two defenders through some motion or playing at a faster tempo when they don't have these stars. And it seems, you know, that they should just never assume it because of the injury problems that two of them have and because of the luck that they as a franchise have. They just got to be able to overcome those in some way. Defensively, it's been pretty impressive. They do a good job of forcing turnovers there. I know this off the top of my head because I wrote about it earlier today. They're one of three teams whose opponents have a 15% turnover percentage. The other two are the Thunder and the Magic. So that is something they really have going for them, even if, in, you know, their opponents still shoot really well against them. They don't have much strong rim protection without Embiid. They don't have a lot of great size on the wings. They've had to play a lot of, like, three-guard lineups and stuff like that with a lot of, you know, older veteran players. But the fact that they've managed to be an above-average defense without Joel, who, at his peak, is a very, very, very good defender, like, they've been able to kind of hold it down. I think that's the reason why they have 8 wins instead of like 3 or 4. They've been able to do that. So I think if Joel, if he is fortunate enough to not get injured for a long stretch of time, I think they're going to be a potential, maybe not defensive juggernaut, but they'll be a strong defensive team with enough guys on offense to get them going. I would say another maybe concern is like Tyrese and Paul George, like they can both look great at times, but the consistency with both of them, with, you know, Paul relying so much on these very tough jumpers that he has clearly shown an ability to make, like him, you know, with how great his game is, he can be very fun to watch. But as I mentioned earlier, like, it doesn't necessarily lead to great offensive efficiency for the whole team. And the same can be true of Maxey sometimes trying to get off these tougher shots that are that he is less adept at, because, you know, Paul's had so much time to work on this in his NBA career. Maxey is still, you know, just now starting to become a veteran. Like, he still clearly very much needs to grow as an individual creator. And I think Nick Nurse and the coaching staff, you know, they obviously don't have the absolute best roster without Joel or one of the other stars, but I do think they have enough pieces to where if they dig deeper into their bag on offense and they come up with more creative stuff, or if they just place more of an emphasis on just get out in the fast break as early as you can, try to hunt early offense at most, like, I think that'll be a part to them, you know, winning more of these games when they're shorthanded, which they really had to do early in the season, but now we're definitely going to have to do, or else they risk falling out of the playoffs. And if they are out of the playoffs but kind of close enough, they're going to lose their pick to the Thunder because their pick is top six protected. This next month or so is going to be really important to seeing, like, okay, do we want to try making a shot at making the playoffs, or do we just need to play cautious, selling a little bit and try to get our pick back? That's going to be a tough sell, especially because of last year, Daryl Morey kind of kept the slate clean so that he could have this big offseason that he did. So to do it in two seasons in a row, even if it's offset by injuries, I think is going to be a really tough sell. So there's a lot of things that could, you know, happen with the Sixers. There's a few signs for optimism in an otherwise pretty rough season. And again, I think a big way, and even if it's later in the season, just seeing Jared McCain again would be great for them, get more data on him, see that he can, you know, make it back. A lot of different ways the Sixers season can go. There's some good, but a lot more bad, unfortunately.
Sam, this is awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time. Please tell everyone where they can find your work, where they can follow you, how they can support you.
You can find me on Twitter at by Sam D. Giovanni, or mostly on Blue Sky. I think I just have just Sam D. Giovanni. I was able to get there first before any others with my name. And on clutchpoints.com, if you go over to the Sixers tab, that's, you know, most of my stuff. I'll be there, you know, covering this wonderful, wonderful team that's always super fun. And thank you again so much for having me on. Like, I've been a fan of No Ceilings for a little bit, so getting the chance to come on one of your guys' shows has been awesome. I hope we both get to see Jared McCann again going forward. Thanks again, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the time. Sam does awesome work. Everyone go follow him. Really insightful Sixers stuff, as you obviously just saw. And you can find so much more of that over at Clutch Points. Sam, thank you.